The future may not be clear, but our commitment is. So when you sit with an advisor at Merrill Lynch, we'll put your interests first. Visit ml.com and learn more about Merrill Lynch, an affiliate of Bank of America. Merrill Lynch makes available products and services offered by Merrill Lynch, Pierce Fenner & Smith Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member SIPC.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq Market Site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Pete Najarian, Tim Seymour, Steve Grasso, and Guy Adami. Tonight on Fast, President Trump is meeting with the Indian Prime Minister right now. They will appear together for a joint news conference. We'll take you there as soon as it starts. Plus, Facebook, just the latest tech company to dive into the world of television. But will its original programming make a splash? And what could it mean for rival Netflix? We'll ask the co-founder of the streaming giant in an exclusive interview. And later, new images of Apple's highly anticipated iPhone 8 leaking. We will give you a sneak peek and separate fact from fiction. But first, we start off with two markets that could be heading for a collision course. Bonds and stocks both surging together as stocks hover near record highs. Check out the TLT, the ETF that tracks the bond market, hitting a year-to-date high, its highest level, in fact, since the election. How long can this rally continue? Which will be the first to break? Does one have to break, Guy?
I don't know if one has to break. And the bond traders will say they're the smartest guys and gals in the room. And the bond market always knows something the equity market doesn't know. But this time last year, you had 10-year yields probably 1.6%. Everybody looking for the downfall of the stock market, probably myself included, by the way. And all we've done is rallied ever since. So although the bond market is clearly telling you something, I think, about the economy, stock market's playing a different game. And look at the transports. Within a whisper of the all-time high, Russell, same thing. Financials held a level that we've talked about now for a long time in the form of the XLF at $23. So unless I'm missing something, which could be very well the truth, I think the stock market continues to go higher here.
Low yields can be glass half full, glass half empty, right? I mean, half empty would be the view that the bond market is telling us something about the economy, which would be bad. Glass half full would be that low yields are actually supportive of valuations. They allow valuations to go higher.
And there's no sign of inflation. So I think that's a big part of it, too. But if you go back before the election, it was 1.8% 10-year yield. That's what you have to look at. And I do believe that if they continue to drop, you don't get corporate tax reform, you don't get a 20% corporate tax rate, that's a problem. That's problematic for the market.
I think people underestimate just how much money is chasing the long end of the curve. And I think if you look at the U.S. market and think about where yields are, 212, 211 on the 10-year, and you think about a 10-year bund, which is at 24 basis points, and you think about the European Central Bank, which I would argue is behind the curve, and then you layer in the fact that, you know, the Bank of International Settlements, which is essentially the central bank for central banks, has been leaning on central banks in their rhetoric over the last few days to do more to take away emergency accommodation. That, to me, signals that I think, if anything, if what's happening here in the yield curve in the United States is any indication, because the Fed is preemptively moving against inflation, which Steve is right, it's not really there, or, you know, maybe it's there in other forms, that actually could be pushing yields down around the world. But again, huge central bank activity in the long end of the curve, pension funds, trusts. I mean, there's a lot of people chasing yields.
So if it's artificial, we then discount that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I look at the bonds just like Buffett and Cooperman both have been on the network over the last couple of months, right? And both of them have essentially said they have no interest in trading in the bonds right now. Risk reward's not there. You'd rather be in. And you mentioned financials. Obviously, we've seen this rotation time and time again. Now you're starting to finally see the biotechs actually over the last month or so really start to perform the upside. You bring up the transportations. There are places, there are pockets, I think, and the fact that this market continues to rotate, if somebody says it, would you rather right now, I'm in stocks all day long.
All right.
I'm taking stocks. I don't see the risk reward being anything even close in the bond world. So I agree with Buffett. I like to listen to Buffett and Cooperman. They seem to be right a lot, so I'll follow along
or
with bond, them.
Or stock proxies. If you look at the XLU, 3.1% yield. It's up 11% year to date. Yep. So guys are playing both growth, if you could say that, in utilities as well as the yield.
So the barbell approach.
Right.
But getting back to your point, I mean, if this is as a result purely or mostly because of central banks and their actions around the world as well as here in the United States, does that mean if we get to a point where the yield curve is inverted, that we shouldn't care so much?
Well, you know, the inverted yield curve usually is a harbinger of recession. And I'm not sure that we're ready to make that call. I am not making that call right now. I can tell you that for sure. I think there's a lot of pressure on for long-term investors that are chasing yield. And there's a lot of great opportunities. Steve talked about utilities, MLPs. I sit on the board for an energy MLP fund, which is yielding 13%. I mean, there's a lot of different places to get yield, emerging market debt. If you don't think that the credit market is blowing up, EMB has a 5% dividend yield. You think about other places in preferreds and in convertible bonds. So these are all asset classes investors should be looking at. And what's going on right now, I think we're all saying, this doesn't feel so bad. It actually feels like the porridge is just right.
I guess I'm going to pose the same question to you then.
What's the question?
If we get to a point where the long end of the curve goes lower, inverted yield curve, but mostly because of this perception that there is a demand for longer-term debt and also central bank actions, does that mean that we then discount an inverted yield curve? It's not a signal of some sort of doom in the economy.
No, I think if the yield curve, to Tim's point, we're a long ways away from that number one. But if it were to get there, I think it would be very concerning. But that we'd have the warning signs long before it got to that point, I think. By the way, we've seen the 2 years, 10 years at levels worse or better, depending on your what you're looking at, than we're currently seeing now. So will the Fed hike us into
worse
a recession?
Meaning narrower.
Narrower, yeah. Correct. The answer is yes. We've had many guests on here saying that's what they always do. Are we there yet? No. Let's see what happens on the next hike, see what happens to the back end. We start getting the twos, tens around 50 basis points, and then we have a different conversation.
And Tony Dwyer was on today. He was talking about when the inversion is going to happen. It would probably be not until the middle of 2018, and then the reactions to that really don't start impacting the market till probably 2020. So we're looking out pretty far in the future, especially for many of us who are investors, but even from the investment standpoint, are we looking out 2, 3, 4, 5 years? I'm not so sure we often.
And does she put on the brakes right now? So that could change the whole calculus to the question that you just posed.
She being Janet Yellen.
Janet Yellen.
Yes, yes.
And look at the dollar. I just want to say, the dollar's rally of 2 years ago is really when it was an indicator of what the Fed has already done. I think if the dollar stays sideways, and I think it's bound to stay sideways, look at the European bank, the central bank data that was out. The IFO Germany index this morning is still near record highs, and I think you've got a lot of opportunity for macro in Europe to get better.
So you self would you rather it over there, the long end of the desk.
I'm going to
would you rather you stocks or bonds right now?
I do think bonds continue to rally here, but I think stocks rally alongside. I mean, I've made this mistake many times over the last few years, thinking one has to give. What the history has shown us, at least over the last 3 years, that doesn't necessarily the case.
All right, let's settle this debate and see what the charts have to say. Let's go off the charts with Chris Varone of Strategus. Chris, what are you looking at?
Well, it's a very important call here as we head into the second half of the year. When we talk about the first half returns, stocks and bonds roughly the same year to date. I think the big key here, though, is when these lines met earlier in the year, once, twice, stocks won both times. S&P higher, S&P higher. We ultimately think S&P higher here again. I want to make a point about what the street is doing here. The street is running very, very long bonds. This is a crowded trade. I think we need to be careful with crowded trades. We've seen that several times this year. I would also just keep in mind, remember, we were 132 12 months ago. We're 264 at the highs. We've only retraced 50% of that. I think 198, 205 is an area that ultimately holds. And looking out to the rest of the year, I think it's important to also remember this is stocks relative bonds. Stocks just broke out above their 2007 high versus bonds. We think this holds and ultimately stocks resume as a leader. And I think the last point, when we look at leadership, if bond yields were going to go meaningfully lower from here, shouldn't groups like consumer staples be doing better? Shouldn't groups like telecom be doing better? You have a stealth bear market playing out in staples. Almost a quarter of the index is down 20% from its recent high. We think bonds, you fade here. We think stocks, you stick with into the second half of the year.
All right. Chris, thank you. Chris Varone of Strategus. So stocks win. Stealth bear. I thought this was a stealth bear market in staples.
Although, I get the point Chris is making, but I think about some of the issues for staples also have something to do with what we're seeing. A lot of downward deflationary pressure in some of the staples. There's a lot of price competition in that space. The telco industry is upside down. I think there are secular trends going on in those places that mean those correlations don't mean as much as they used to.
Right. Frankly. What'd you do today?
I actually made some sales because I want to make room to buy some stuff. So I sold Altria Group, I sold Olin, and I sold my long-term holding in GDX, the miners.
What do you want to buy?
So I did actually buy it. I bought Avis.
Interesting.
You see, Hertz, actually, it's funny. I said stay away from Hertz on Friday. This thing, the stock was up 15% or something today on the back of the Apple news. I'd say what's interesting to me is the continued relative strength, at least, in the biotech. I mean, we talk about it now for the last few months. I still think, obviously, biotech closed unchanged, slightly lower today. I still think biotech is the place to be right now.
And that's where I bought last week. I actually already had Gilead, and we've had an
odd 1%.
We have had a really strange rally from the low mid-60s in there up above $70 a share on nothing. On nothing other than people looking at it saying, hey, maybe the valuations and obviously yields and some of these other things. Celgene I bought as well last week to add to it. So now I've got a little bit more exposure in the biotech.
Doesn't it make you worry that it's on nothing?
Well, you know
and
what?
It's up 10% of the patch Gilead in one
right.
month over nothing?
No, because I think it was oversold to begin. And I still think when you look at valuations, whether you're looking at Celgene at a 15 or you look at Gilead in the single digits, and we all talk about the cash, when will they spend it? They haven't done it yet, but that's always there as a potential catalyst.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it's nothing, Mel. I mean, if you think about it, again, there's been a regulatory green light that's actually given the whole sector ability to run. Celgene has run actually faster than
but
Gilead, so the relative value.
Of proposed regulation, not a regulatory
green light. I agree.
Right?
Same thing we got in the financial sector,
true,
which has been enough to have them rally.
All right, coming up, President Trump and India's Prime Minister Modi are moments away from a joint news conference. We'll bring you there live, tell you what the market implications could be. Plus, with Facebook's entry into scripted drama, did Netflix just go from predator to prey? We'll talk to Netflix co-founder Mitch Lowe in what Facebook's move means for the streaming giant. And later, the farmer bro himself, Martin Shkreli, back in the spotlight as he heads back to court today and it could put a bullseye on the back of biotech stocks. We'll explain. Much more Fast Money right after the break. Welcome back to Fast Money. You're looking at a live shot of the Rose Garden where President Trump and India's Prime Minister Modi are expected to give a joint statement in just a few moments. Let's get to Seema Modi at the White House with more. Seema.
Melissa, both leaders so far have had very warm remarks about their interactions so far. Once the cabinet meeting closed, Trump saying, "This has been a great honor to host Modi. We have agreed on everything, and thank you for ordering military equipment." Not sure exactly what Trump was pointing to, but it is a sign that we could see a stronger alliance, defense alliance, between the United States and India. Prior to Modi's arrival, there was talk the Indian government was expressing their interest in buying high-tech drones from the United States, so U.S. surveillance that they can use on their eastern coastline to better patrol the Indian Ocean. That's a region where we're seeing China play a more dominant role, so that's been ruffling the feathers of the Indian government. As you know, for years, Washington has seen India as a key strategic ally on the economic and defense front. It's a strategic ally for us also as we look at foreign policy and counterterrorism efforts. This morning, Prime Minister Modi speaking with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, where the conversation was really expected to be around military and defense cooperation. So that is something that we could see Mr. Trump and Prime Minister Modi refer to during their joint statement. And we'll have to see if we see any type of announcement around this high tech drone deal. Another topic that could be discussed is energy. India has been a big buyer of U.S. energy, specifically liquefied natural gas in Louisiana and Maryland. That's a point that Modi will likely make in his meetings with Trump, a sign that he's looking to make more deals and investments in the United States, also in an effort to bring down that U.S. trade deficit with India, which we know has been a concern for Trump. The U.S. trade deficit with India ranks India at the 10th level at around $30 billion. It's a significant amount, but pales in comparison to the likes of China and Germany. So defense, energy, and trade, those are the three topics we do expect the two leaders to talk about. After their joint statement, they will then go on to a cocktail reception, a dinner, which, as we've been saying, that will be Modi will be the first foreign state, head of state, to have dinner, a working dinner, with the president at the White House. Once we get the statement, of course, we'll get it to you. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Seema, thank you. Seema Modi at the White House for us. All right, Tim, we got to go to you, the ambassador.
Well, so when Prime Minister Modi was elected in 2014, India went on a tear. It rallied 27% for a year. Since that time, it's actually done nothing. So the honeymoon period of high expectations, a lot of reform. This is a country that we should be doing a lot of business with. They should be our friend. If you think about the technology kind of benefits and certainly the strengths of this economy and the demographics in India, it makes a lot of sense why this is a high-growth market that people are willing to pay up for. Again, India is very expensive relative to emerging markets, probably should be, because, again, not a lot of oil and gas plays, a lot of technology plays, and certainly a place where people feel corporate governance is better.
Yeah.
It's not a catch-all market, though, and I will say that the reforms in India on some level are a lot harder to get through than people think because of the big social net. It's a very complicated society, and I think a lot of people have expected a lot of great things to happen overnight.
Yeah, and there's certainly hope, strong hope, among the tech sector and tech giants that India would be the next big growth market. I mean, clearly, Apple is hoping that is the case, Pete. And interestingly, a lot of these tech CEOs, including CEO Tim Cook, they met with Modi prior to this meeting with Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've been working hard to get this in. And obviously with 4G, as that's getting built out, I think this is something that's phenomenal potentially for Apple. Obviously, the expense of the phone is something. But as they continue to the Made in India brand that they're starting to build out there, and they're starting to finally be able to do that in India, that's going to bring those prices down as well. They're talking about potentially getting in price down by like $100 per unit. Right. So there is an ability for them to. And right now, Apple's only got 3% of that smartphone market. They got nothing. Samsung owns it. That's a huge market for them to actually capture in the smartphone world.
And it does seem like India is sort of opening. They want manufacturing. They want a plant.
Totally do.
And Made in India is a big platform for Narendra Modi. And so that's theoretically a good thing for U.S. companies.
Sure. Banking system. Alibaba is making an investment. It increased its investment in Paytm, pay through mobile. So they increased it to, I guess, like 40% at this point. People think of it as a Chinese company. You have another 1.3 billion people in India that they are going to really start to leverage, and I think you're going to see that going forward.
No, but if you want, if you're a foreign company, you have to have a basically an Indian company of origin as a 50% partner
like
to
China.
Do business, like China. So who was ahead of the curve there? Starbucks was. I think they got in there 5 or 6 years ago with Tata Global Beverages, and it's not paying dividends yet, but it's clearly something that could pay dividends going forward. So if I look for one company that could actually have a huge input or impact in India, I would put Starbucks at the top of the list.
I think outside of investing in an Indian ETF like the INDA, which is the Barclays iShares, it's conservative. I mean, Facebook, if you think about internet penetration in India is about 34%. Yet it's the second largest internet market, 462 million users. There's so much. I mean, this is what we're all saying. But Facebook, if you consider their percentage of users in India relative to other emerging economies, it's already doing big business there. I think Facebook is probably as good of a domestic play here to play India.
All right. If you're just tuning in, on the left side of your screen, that is a live shot of the Rose Garden. We are expecting President Trump and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi to come out, give a joint statement on their meeting today. As soon as they set that, we'll bring you there live. Meantime, we want to get to the other big news out of D.C. The Congressional Budget Office just releasing its score of the revised Senate GOP health care bill earlier this afternoon. Elon Moy has the latest reactions from D.C. Elon.
Melissa, the headline numbers, 22 million more people would be uninsured in 2026 than under current law. That compares to 23 million more people who would have been uninsured under the House version of the bill. The Senate version of the bill would also reduce the deficit by $321 billion over the next decade. Again, that compares to the House version of the bill, which would have reduced the deficit by $119 billion over the next 10 years. Now, one important thing to pay attention to is the impact of the Senate bill on premiums. The CBO found that premiums would increase in the first few years after the bill would have been enacted and then fall as much as 30% in 2020. And that's largely because the type of insurance plans that the programs would cover would change. So you would be paying less in premiums, but the insurance plan that you get would also cover less. Another important area to pay attention to is the impact on older Americans. The AARP has come out against the Senate version of the bill and was against the House version of the bill as well. The CBO found that the tax credits in the Senate version of the bill would result in some seniors seeing lower premiums than they would have seen under the House version. However, if you're a middle-class senior making about, if you were between the ages of 50 and about 64, you could see your premium rise to $20,500 a year. $20,500 a year. So that is not the direction that the Senate Republicans were hoping that they would be able to take this bill in. They were hoping they could bring down those costs for all older Americans going forward. So we're still digging through the numbers in this document, but we'll bring you more as we have it, guys.
And Elon, in terms of the senators who have publicly expressed their misgivings about the Senate bill, do we have any indication on how the score is impacting what they think of it?
Well, we know that one senator, Susan Collins of Maine, had said she wanted to see the CBO score before making a decision. We know that five senators are already opposed to it. There are about 10 or so who are on the fence. Senator John Cornyn has said that he hopes to bring this bill to the floor this week. They could start procedural votes as early as Tuesday, but Wednesday is more likely. I think that folks on the Hill are still digesting this report. They're still looking at the numbers. I expect by tomorrow morning we'll get a better sense of where things lie.
All right. Elon, thank you. Elon Moy in Washington, D.C. Steve Grasso, what do you make of the score?
Well, first of all, both sides always say that this is inaccurate when they try to score these things. You don't know how human behavior is going to come into effect.
UnitedHealthcare is up 16% year to date. I think the HMOs want to be out of it. They want to opt out of it. They said that it's going to collapse without any intervention anyway. THC, HCA, both up, I think, 26% and 17%, respectively. So the hospitals are going to get a better than what they figured payout in this deal and what's going on now with the regulation being removed than what they once thought was going to be when the regulation was going to be moved. So I think you still buy the whole space.
Still. Okay, what happens if this doesn't come to a vote this week? What happens to that biggest one-week gain since the election for healthcare that we saw last week?
I tend to agree with Steve, quite frankly. I look at UnitedHealth, I look at Humana. I mean, that space has been on a tear. We've all been talking about them, and we've been kicking this around for the better part of 6 months. I still think some of these trade very, very cheap, quite frankly. I think there's still upside to many of these names.
I think UnitedHealthcare is a phenomenal company, and they are kind of an all-weather stock here. Yep. That's been proven. Problem is the stock trades around 24 times current, 18 times future. They raised the dividend. It's become kind of a dividend play. I think you get to a place here, if there's any decent news for the rest of the sectors, you have to see relative value out of these plays. It's not time to jump into hospitals, but I think UnitedHealthcare is expensive.
See, real quick, I think you can get into hospitals. Tenet Healthcare, we can disagree. That's what makes markets.
Look, now you have your ear to the AARP, so I mean.
I just got my card recently. What are you, in my mailbox too, Weisenheimer?
Elon just said his premiums could go up by a lot.
Look, we should be sensitive to that. We should be sensitive to your needs right now, guys.
I'm sensitive. I think that's not a good thing.
You know what? That was almost
discrimination.
That was almost discrimination.
Anyway.
Sorry about that.
Anyway.
Waiting for
you. Blank out for a second?
Yeah, just a little bit of a moment.
Hospitals.
Dementia.
You're saying?
Tenet Healthcare. Right. Held 15 a couple times. Valuation is reasonable. The best group in the space in terms of healthcare, I think, is Leerink Swann. Beginning of June, they put a buy rating on the stock, $27 price target. So, to me, the risk-reward in THC is very good.
All right. Just a reminder, we are awaiting that joint news conference between President Trump and Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi. As soon as they step out, we will bring you to the Rose Garden live. And also ahead, Facebook going Hollywood as it jumps into original content. Will it be a major headwind for Netflix? The co-founder of the streaming giant weighs in. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Did you see that? Leaked images of the new iPhone 8 have Apple bulls in a frenzy. We'll show you the pictures and tell you what they could mean for the stock. Plus,
up from the 36 chambers! It's the goose!
He's back. The farmer bro is in court today. We'll tell you what happened and what it could mean for surging biotech stocks when he returns.
Let's get to Eamon Javers in the Rose Garden, where President Trump is set to make a statement with India's Prime Minister Modi. Eamon.
Yeah, hi, Melissa. We just saw the Vice President and the First Lady come in and take their seats here. So we're inside the two-minute warning. We're expecting this event to begin very shortly. The President and the Prime Minister have been interacting throughout the day here and throughout the afternoon here at the White House. And one of the points that the White House wanted to underscore about this event is that this will be the first foreign dignitary that the Trump administration has hosted for a dinner at the White House. And they're emphasizing that that, of course, is a sign of respect and the significance of the level of this visit of the Indian Prime Minister here today. We're going to wait and see what the two officials have to say here. But remember, this is a joint statement, not a news conference. Typically, when the president meets with a foreign head of state, we'll see what's called a two and two, two questions from the foreign media and two questions from the U.S. media. In this case, we're just getting a joint statement, and we don't expect that the two leaders will take questions, Melissa.
Your issues that you're expecting to hear about in this statement, Eamon?
Well, I think they're going to talk about security and defense cooperation as one of the key elements. A lot of the pre-meeting briefings that were given to reporters were very, very much focused on the issue of terrorism, control, and also defense spending. We expect an increasingly close relationship between India and the United States in terms of defense procurement. One of the big issues has been whether or not the Indians will buy U.S. drones for patrol of some of their airspace. So that's one of the things in terms of deal-making that we'll watch to see during the course of this visit. And then, of course, just the tenor in terms of this president's relationship with the wider world. We'll wait and see if there are some of those warm moments that we saw between Prime Minister Modi and Barack Obama during the Obama administration. We'll look to see the Indian side try to replicate some of that here with President Trump as well.
And it was interesting, Eamon, to see all these U.S. CEOs meet with Modi ahead of meeting with Trump. I mean, J.P. Morgan CEO, Tim Cook, Sundar Pichai, just to name a few. Was this unusual in terms of these CEOs courting the visiting foreign head of state?
Well, look, it definitely underscores the economic opportunity for American companies in terms of dealing with the massive market that India represents. And it also dovetails with the Trump administration's agenda here. Remember, this is a president who got elected talking about creating jobs for Americans and opportunities for American business. That very much is in line with what he's trying to accomplish here today. So if there are opportunities where American businesses can have those meetings, as well as the president and the dignitaries here at the White House, they're definitely going to take them here.
You know, it's interesting it will be interesting to see the relationship between the two. In many ways, they have sort of similar platforms. Narendra Modi has making India great, essentially, or made in India. President Trump has emphasized manufacturing in America. Both have pretty strong social media presences with more than 30 million Twitter followers, and both use social media to advance their agendas.
Yeah, we'll have to watch the Twitter feeds of both gentlemen when they're here in the White House and see what they tweet out and what they tweet behind the scenes. The Prime Minister was just asked in a meeting here at the White House for his reaction. He said he'll have more to say after the meeting concludes. He was talking to reporters very briefly, said he didn't necessarily want to give away the tenor of his comments, but just sort of emphasized the warm reception that he's gotten here so far at the White House. So things seem to be going very smoothly. We'll get more of the details here after this is over with. And then, of course, in these joint statements, which are parsed so very carefully by all media around the world, they're looking at this relationship. And here's the president.
States and the Prime Minister of the Republic of India.
Thank you very much. Prime Minister Modi, thank you for being here with us today. It's a great honor to welcome the leader of the world's largest democracy to the White House. I have always had a deep admiration for your country and for its people, and a profound appreciation for your rich culture, heritage, and traditions. This summer, India will celebrate the 70th anniversary of its independence. And on behalf of the United States, I want to congratulate the Indian people on this magnificent milestone in the life of your very, very incredible nation. During my campaign, I pledged that if elected, India would have a true friend in the White House. And that is now exactly what you have, a true friend. The friendship between the United States and India is built on shared values, including our shared commitment to democracy. Not many people know it, but both American and the Indian constitutions begin with the same three very beautiful words, we the people. The Prime Minister and I both understand the crucial importance of those words, which helps to form the foundation of cooperation between our two countries. Relations between countries are strongest when they are devoted to the interests of the people we serve. And after our meetings today, I will say that the relationship between India and the United States has never been stronger, has never been better. I'm proud to announce to the media, to the American people, and to the Indian people that Prime Minister Modi and I are world leaders in social media. We're believers. Giving the citizens of our countries the opportunity to hear directly from their elected officials and for us to hear directly from them. I guess it's worked very well in both cases. I am thrilled to salute you, Prime Minister Modi, and the Indian people for all that you are accomplishing together. Your accomplishments have been vast. India has the fastest growing economy in the world. We hope we're going to be catching you very soon in terms of percentage increase. I have to tell you that. We're working on it. In just 2 weeks, you will begin to implement the largest tax overhaul in your country's history. We're doing that also, by the way. creating great new opportunities for your citizens. You have a big vision for improving infrastructure, and you are fighting government corruption, which is always a grave threat to democracy. Together, our countries can help chart an optimistic path into the future, one that unleashes the power of new technology, new infrastructure, and the enthusiasm and excitement of very hardworking and very dynamic people. I look forward to working with you, Mr. Prime Minister, to create jobs in our countries, to grow our economies, and to create a trading relationship that is fair and reciprocal. It is important that barriers be removed to the export of U.S. goods into your markets and that we reduce our trade deficit with your country. I was pleased to learn about an Indian Airlines recent order of 100 new American planes, one of the largest orders of its kind, which will support thousands and thousands of American jobs. We're also looking forward to exporting more American energy to India as your economy grows, including major long-term contracts to purchase American natural gas, which are right now being negotiated, and we will sign them, trying to get the price up a little bit. To further our economic partnership, I'm excited to report that the Prime Minister has invited my daughter Ivanka to lead the U.S. delegation to the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in India this fall, and I believe she has accepted. Finally, the security partnership between the United States and India is incredibly important. Both our nations have been struck by the evils of terrorism, and we are both determined to destroy terrorist organizations and the radical ideology that drives them. We will destroy radical Islamic terrorism. Our militaries are working every day to enhance cooperation between our military forces, and next month they will join together with the Japanese Navy to take part in the largest maritime exercise ever conducted in the vast Indian Ocean. I also thank the Indian people for their contributions to the effort in Afghanistan and for joining us in applying new sanctions against the North Korean regime. The North Korean regime is causing tremendous problems, and it's something that has to be dealt with and probably dealt with rapidly. Working together, I truly believe our two countries can set an example for many other nations, make great strides in defeating common threats, and make great progress in unleashing amazing prosperity and growth. Prime Minister Modi, thank you again for joining me today and for visiting our country and our wonderful White House and Oval Office. I enjoyed our very productive conversation this afternoon and look forward to its continuation tonight at dinner. The future of our partnership has never looked brighter. India and the United States will always be tied together in friendship and respect. Prime Minister Modi, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Rashtrapati President Trump and First Lady and Vice President, ladies and gentlemen, and media. Sarvapratham, opening tweet se lekar.
Right, from the opening
Varta
tweet.
Ke apan
to the end of our
Rashtrapati
talks.
Trump ki mitrata bhare
President
welcome ka
Trump's welcome, which is filled with friendliness.
White House mein उनके
his
तथा फर्स्ट लेडी द्वारा
वार्म वेलकम शानदार बाय
अतिथि सत्कार का
हिमसेल्फ एंड द
मैं हृदय से आभार व्यक्त करता हूं
बोथ ऑफ यू फ्रॉम द बॉटम ऑफ माय हार्ट फॉर दिस वार्म वेलकम.
प्रेसिडेंट ट्रंप ने मेरे लिए जो भाव व्यक्त किए
I would also like
भारत
to give
a
special thanks to you, President Trump, for having spent so much time with me, for having
भारी हो और मैं उनकी बेटी का भी भारत में स्वागत
tell you that I'm eager to welcome your daughter to India for the entrepreneurship summit. President Trump, I'd once again like to thank you for the time that you have spent with me. I'd like to give you a special time. Thanks for that. My visit and our talks today will mark a very important page in the history of the collaboration and cooperation between our two nations.
Rashtrapati Trump aur meri aaj ki baatcheet
The talks between
हर प्रकार से
His Excellency President
अत्यंत महत्वपूर्ण रही है
have been extremely
क्योंकि
important from all
यह परस्पर विश्वास पर आधारित
for several reasons, because
क्योंकि
they were based on mutual trust.
मध्य नजर ये हमारी
because
values
of the convergence and similarities they revealed in our values, in our priorities, and in our concerns and interests.
क्योंकि यह भारत तथा यूनाइटेड स्टेट्स के
बिकॉज दे फोकस्ड
परस्पर सहयोग
ऑन द हाईएस्ट लेवल्स ऑफ अचीवमेंट इन आर कोऑपरेशन
चरम सीमाओं की
एंड म्यूचुअल सपोर्ट एंड पार्टनरशिप
क्योंकि
बिकॉज
हम दोनों
We've been listening to Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi giving a joint statement with President Trump. President Trump emphasizing the similarities between the two countries, even going as far to say that the first three words in their constitutions are the same, we the people. But then going on to talk about the importance of trade, particularly lifting some of the barriers in terms of the exports being made to India. He also highlighted a large order for aircraft by an Indian airliner, which could keep American jobs here in the United States, of course, and another emphasis on the fight against terrorism that the two countries will embark on. Anything change your view in terms of India as a investment?
No, this is an incredibly warm gathering. It's as warm as I've heard from this White House, and it's very impressive. And if you think about India's partnership in terms of growth, innovation, science in this country, the irony that this happens on a day when the Supreme Court has weighed in on the travel ban, the H-1B visas drastically affects Indians and especially the Silicon Valley and the tech world. And the other irony for me is that if you think about it, adding U.S. jobs, I mean, technology and outsourcing to India is killing U.S. jobs. I mean, and that's not a bad thing. It's the world we live in. But the reality is that India has been a major part of a secular force that's actually changing the way people work in this country, and it's painful. So that's what I think.
So if you think about LNG exports, the first company that was allowed to export LNG was Cheniere. It's up 16.5%. The chart looks amazing still on the stock. If you look at Lockheed, it's up 12% year-to-date. General Dynamics, up 16% year-to-date, all still viable. All on this. If you look at this relationship,
right.
We always have, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, a good relationship with India since about 2000, since Bill Clinton opened up the doors there. So I do think that this would be a great relationship, and it's worth buying stocks.
And for LNG, on top of that, the president's expected to make a speech at the DOE this week, and the focus will be on exports and potentially expanding exports, including LNG, so that could be another boost. Still ahead, Facebook is going Hollywood, the social media company, just the latest player to get into original content. So what will it mean for Netflix? The co-founder of the streaming giant, Mitch Lowe, weighs in. Plus, leaked photos of the highly anticipated iPhone 8 sending the internet into a frenzy today.
Frenzy.
So how will the new models stack up against the current version? We'll have a special report. Welcome back to Fast Money. Lights, camera, likes. Facebook is going Hollywood. The company reportedly in talks to create original content by the end of the summer. Julia Borson joins us now from Los Angeles with the details. Hey, Julia.
Hey, Melissa. Well, Facebook executives have been making the rounds down here in Hollywood, meeting with the studios and talent agencies about creating all sorts of shows to be exclusive to Facebook. Now, Facebook has already commissioned some unscripted shows from BuzzFeed, Vox Media, and Condé Nast, among others. Now, those will be the first to launch, reportedly by the end of this summer. But Facebook also wants to invest in more traditional scripted TV shows. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Facebook is willing to spend up to $3 million per episode, which is in line with the cost of some shows on AMC or Netflix. This all comes as Facebook, along with Google, look to reassure advertisers about brand safety and chase television ad dollars. Facebook's VP of Media Partnerships, Nick Rudin, saying today, quote, "We're focused on episodic shows and helping all our partners understand what works across different verticals and topics. We're funding these shows directly now, but over time, we want to help lots of creators make videos funded through revenue sharing." Now, while Facebook's promise of viewership data is particularly appealing to studios, I'm also hearing that a point of conflict in negotiations is Facebook's interest in owning many of the shows, and studios are reluctant to give up long-term rights. Now, this is just the latest example of Facebook doubling down on video. Last year, launching a video tab for the app. This year, a separate video app for Facebook users to save videos to watch on their TVs. Facebook wants to keep its users in its family of apps, whether they want to make a phone call or watch a TV show. Melissa?
All right, Julia, thank you. Julia Borson in Los Angeles. Well, Facebook's latest endeavor into scripted TV means there would be yet another player in an already crowded video on demand space. Netflix, Amazon, Apple, Hulu have all established original content with growing popularity, and there were over 450 scripted shows on TV last year. So with fresh competition from Mark Zuckerberg, is the moat around Reed Hastings' streaming empire drying up? Mitch Lowe co-founded Netflix and currently serves as CEO of MoviePass. Mitch, welcome to Fast Money. Great
to have
you with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
How do you think this changes the game?
Well, boy, to be a writer today in Hollywood, this is like a renaissance. There is going to be so much great content being produced. So for consumers, it's fantastic. I just worry that we're inundated by so many choices, so many options. It's actually going to depress consumption eventually.
I mean, people theoretically have only a certain number of minutes in a day. Most of us do to watch content.
After watching Fast Money.
Obviously, right. Then yeah. The remainder right. is up for grabs. Man. But that remainder gets smaller and smaller if you have to divide it amongst so many. I mean, it reminds me almost of when cable TV expanded from however many channels to all of a sudden hundreds of channels and nobody watched anything really.
Right. Well, people are watching more content. Everywhere you look at Times Square, it's coming at us all the time. But what's really becoming a problem is how do you choose? And there really is no good way to find what you want. You end up struggling to find something good. On the other side, there's going to be a lot of great content out there.
How strong is the moat for Netflix at this point, given all the competition out there for content and for viewership?
Well, there's really, one real big moat, and that is the culture that Reed has created at Netflix empowers people like Ted Sarandos, who is a total genius at content. He understands it better than anybody, better than data will ever show you. So he's got a team that knows how to create and to acquire great content that people love. They also, of course, know how to identify the people who are going to love it, and lastly, people love Netflix. On the other hand, companies like Facebook know a whole lot more about you than Netflix.
So the algorithm right now is a huge advantage for Netflix. But if somebody else has a great algorithm, I mean, arguably Amazon would theoretically also have a terrific algorithm going.
Sure. Google, Facebook, right. Amazon, they have kind of more of a 360 degree look at who you are.
Last question, Netflix. What happens with Netflix in a year, let's say? Is it acquired in your view? Guy likes Disney for Netflix.
Yeah, I thought I shared a cube with Reed for a few years, and Reed always wanted to run a studio. That's essentially what he's doing now. But he would have been a great successor to Bob Iger. Potentially he'd be a great successor to Tim Cook. He understands how to drive culture both on the content, entertainment side, as well as technology. And I think it would make great sense for both of those companies. But logic sometimes doesn't really work out in the real world.
All right, Mitch, thanks so much for coming by. We had to shorten it because of all this breaking news, but we hope you'll come back.
Thank you.
Mitch
Thank
Lowe,
you.
The co-founder of Netflix.
Thank you.
You still think you stand by Disney for, he makes a pretty good case, Mitch does, Apple for Netflix.
I mean, that's
and we've
been,
seen
that's
that in the journal.
But listen, I do think Disney and Netflix makes a lot of sense. If Mr. Iger's looking for a successor, I think Reed Hastings, from what I could tell, and we've met him a couple times, that's about as good as it gets. He's taken maybe two missteps during his tenure at Netflix at most. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's been flawless their execution. So I think it would make a lot of sense.
Why not just hire him away? I mean, you know, that's not the reason to buy Netflix. And in fact, what I hear Mitch saying is that ultimately this is a content company. Reed Hastings wants to run a content company, wants to run a studio, not a streaming service, not something that has the multiple of a streaming service and a software company. And I think that's where I get worked up about Netflix. It's not that it's not a great company that's changed the world. It is. But at what price? And I don't think Disney needs them.
And does Apple need somebody? I mean, do they actually have to go out and find something, or can they start getting into this content a lot deeper than they have? I mean, they've got the similar algorithms that they're able to follow along with Amazon and Facebook and everybody else. They know what we're doing, when we're doing it, how we're doing it, what we like to do.
Which is scary for
That's
you.
That's very scary. Well, for maybe for all of us.
Tim.
Just kidding.
Just saying.
Up next, Farmer Bro Martin Shkreli back in court today. We are live in Brooklyn with the very latest. Much more fast right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Farmer Bro Martin Shkreli back in court today as his fraud trial officially kicks off. Let's get to Meg Terrell in Brooklyn for the very latest on this story. Hi, Meg.
Hey, Mel. Day one of U.S. versus Martin Shkreli just wrapping up here. The so-called Farmer Bro arriving here in federal court in Brooklyn this morning. He faces 8 counts of securities fraud, conspiracy to commit securities fraud, and conspiracy to commit wire fraud, to which he's pleaded not guilty on all of those counts. Of course, that's not what made him famous is not what he's on trial for. That, of course, was raising the price of the drug Daraprim by 5,000%. I'm being told now that Shkreli and probably his attorneys, they are actually leaving the courthouse right now. You can see him there. With attorney Ben Braffman and also Mark Agnifilo there in the front. Now, this has been a long day of jury selection, not entirely successful. They have not finished the jury selection for Martin Shkreli yet. A lot of people coming into the courtroom with biases, telling the judge that they think he's the face of corporate greed. They have total disdain for the man, saying, quote, I think he's an evil man. I don't think I can be fair. The question, of course, for biotech stocks is, with all of this talk of price gouging, 2 people said he thought he raised the price of the EpiPen. Does this bring drug prices back into the national conversation, putting a target on the backs of drug companies? Of course, a big political conversation, Mel. We'll be watching all of that and more, bringing you hopefully opening statements if they can get this jury together tomorrow.
All right, Meg, thank you. Meg Terrell in Brooklyn. Interestingly, the reason why those people were saying that they couldn't be fair to him is completely separate from the charges that he is facing in court, right? Raising Daraprim yes. by 5,000%. That's another issue. The guy's got a lot of issues.
Isn't that, that's typically... So this is a fascinating thing. Meg's point is, will this bring biotech back into the crosshairs of the political arena, and then subsequently we'll do the stocks?
Reminds people about that 5,000% increase.
Yes, it does. I think we've pushed through that. I think maybe this is actually a good thing for pharmacy companies. Mm-hmm. Maybe they can get in front of this instead of playing from behind as they've done over the last few years.
Yeah, I think we are past this. I mean, the IBB has shown that we're past it. Regulation has shown that we're past it. We haven't passed anything, to your point, at the top of the show. But I do believe that this is in the rearview mirror. I'm playing pharma with Valiant. Still, I'm up about 55%, but I told you I was playing this for a move to 20 or 30, not a move to 15 or 17 where it's at right now.
Yeah, and I actually think if most of the folks in the Republican Party that are pushing for lower premiums, and that's actually, that is there for the masses. And I think there's a counterbalance to who cares about Pharma, bro? The guy gets way more attention than he deserves. It gets down to the fact that the sector, I think, has been leaned on biotech. A lot of these names, especially the top of that ETF, are trading at multiples that are very attractive.
Just quickly, in terms of the volume in the options market on IBB, we've seen extraordinary volume on the ETF, the equity.
And we've also seen extraordinary, when I look at Gilead, I look at Celgene, I look
and
at some of these names.
And that makes you think what?
It starts to make me think that, despite the fact of what we just saw right there, that's back in the public eye, but I think that'll be gone very quickly.
All right. Final trade time. Pete Najarian, back over
Looking
to you.
Looking at Lululemon. I love what I'm seeing in there. The stock's been on a tear to the upside. We're seeing some upside calls. I think it's going higher.
Dempsey
India, HDB Bank. You can buy it on the New York, HDB.
Grasso.
Avis with that Google headline. Right now, it's back from the dead. CAR is the ticker. That's how it comes out. I bought it today.
Guy Donovan.
You know what's most troubling about that footage? The guy with the back, the full backpack on. Did you see that guy walking out of there?
You want to be even. You don't want to have undisturbed.
But that's,
anyway.
Guy needs to wash his hair.
Tenet Healthcare, the hospitals. I'm on the other side of Tim Seymour on this one, THC.
I'm Melissa Lee. Thanks so much for watching. See you back here tomorrow again at 5 for more Fast Money. Meantime, Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.